We are really keen, obviously, to see more on childcare, but there's a range of other areas that we have been called for by a range of stakeholders, and really interesting stakeholders. So one of those is paid parental leave. I'm absolutely not expecting to see it in the budget, but wouldn't it be great if something that the Business Council of Australia, the Australian Council of Social Services, a range of not-for-profits, commercial industry are calling for is improvements in our paid parental leave. And when we talk about that, we're really a great proposal that's on the table that is affordable and will change the experience of gender inequity both in work and in the home, which is really important to shifting gender norms, is to actually give paid parental leave access to both women and men and lifting the amount. So it's currently available for 18 weeks at the minimum wage. We really want that call for lifting it to 26 weeks paid leave available to men and women. And I love that idea that BCA and others have put on the table to actually add an extra 2 weeks if it's shared equally between men and women, because what that really does is level the playing field of the cost of employing a woman can be the same as the cost of employing a man in the way that businesses are thinking about this, because men are equally entitled to paid parental leave. And I say this as a new mum with an 8-month-old and a partner who's just had the very fortunate circumstance of paid parental leave. And I can tell you that the relationship that it can form between a father and a child and the ability for me to be able to work post-pregnancy, I mean, my own experience confirms all the economics that this is a policy we have to be pursuing and is really needed for our workforce.
How should we boost access to childcare for women, especially those over 35 and those struggling to afford quality childcare? What results will this bring?
I think we have to welcome the government's announcement of $1.7 billion for childcare. This is a sector that does need investment, but we also need to be investing in the kind of structure and the marketplace for childcare to make sure there is quality childcare. So we're addressing the supply side as well as the demand side. I think a critical question around the childcare policy is, should it be capped or means tested, which is in effect the government is still doing by making it only entitled to those for the second child, but also it does have implications for what income level you have as to what level of entitlement. The other reason we're thinking about childcare is really about women's participation in work, and the country actually needs to be utilising this huge resource of women. We have a skills gap. We need to be tapping into women and making sure that they're participating in work, and childcare enables that. So really it's about all women accessing childcare. It's not really a measure that we're undertaking purely around redistribution of income, which I think we should be doing through a really progressive tax system. Actually, the childcare policy, it gets really complex and has really deterring effects for women participating in work if it is means tested. So I really think we want to try and remove some of the means testing, make childcare more universally available to all women to really achieve the boost in participation that we need to see.
How should we narrow the retirement saving gap between men and women?
We know that the retirement savings gap in Australia is still very large between men and women. The median super balance for women is about 21% lower than men, and that really places women in a much worse position when they go to retire than men. Even Australian Super has figures much higher at around women retiring with about 42% less super. So what's causing this? Well, there's a range of factors at play. Obviously, and everyone points to, yes, women do take time off work for having children and caring responsibilities factor, but there are a number of other factors that are causing women to retire with much lower super. And in fact, a lot of it comes back to the gender pay gap, which, again, women we know are earning on average 13.4% less than men in the Australian workforce. And that equates to around $240 a week less than men. So first and foremost, that gender pay gap is something we need to address. But there's a range of other factors as well at play, including that almost half of females work part-time work and many in low-paid jobs. So again, the low pay is feeding into the retirement savings, but also by being part-time, part of our superannuation system is that if you earn under $450 a month, then super is, you're not entitled to super on that income. So for lower income or part-time workers and those that earn multiple jobs, so a few jobs that might under 450 jobs, they're not accumulating any super or entitled to super. I think there's a range of things we need to do, focusing on addressing that gender pay gap and thinking about entitlements to super for part-time and low-income workers is critical.
What will be helpful to decrease the women unemployment rate?
The unemployment rate's really interesting right now, and it's a fairly complex story when we look at it from a gender perspective, in part because we've had some recent improvements and unemployment falling from 5.8% in March to 5.6% in April, and that really surprised everyone with 70,000 additional jobs. So it's a pretty impressive recovery that we're experiencing. And really what is driving that is in part women returning to work. So it's an exciting and interesting development, particularly in light of the experience of COVID, where I refer to a colleague, Danielle Woods, who's the head of the Grattan Institute. Her kind of description is the triple whammy that women faced during COVID. They were more likely to lose their jobs, more likely to do unpaid work at home, and they're less likely to get government support during that time. So women were really hit hard in terms of unemployment during the pandemic, but we're starting to see some improvement. And we need to remember, though, that that improvement is on the back of much lower participation rates for women in the workforce. So women are about 61.2% of the workforce, compared to men who are about, participating rate is around 70.9%. So whilst there's some improvement and some positive trends, we're still at a very much behind in terms of participation rates for women. So a lower starting point for women in terms of employment. What we need to really be thinking about then when we go head into the budget next week is, what can we expect? What would we like the government to be thinking about to address these complex stories around gaps in women's retirement savings and women's experience of unemployment and the pandemic?
Last year's budget addressed broader issues like investment, infrastructure, and tax breaks to create stimulus for the economy. And Amanda Robbins believes we do need measures that specifically help women in this year's budget.
I think what we want to see in the budget is a far more enlightened view of the distributional impacts of the pandemic, but also on what the economy needs longer term. They involve some gendered responses. For instance, we want to see childcare, and the government's really announced a very welcome package of that $1.7 billion improvement and change to entitlements for childcare, lifting some of the caps on the cost of childcare and some of the subsidy from 80 to 95% in some cases. So I think we have to really welcome that. But there's many more things that we would hope to see in the budget that really does address the different distributional experience of gender in the workplace.